Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. And it's a happy week in Western Pennsylvania and across Steelers Nation as the Steelers got a comfortable 38-16 win over the Washington Redskins. And Dave, yesterday we had the Mike Tomlin press conference right after we did our recap of the game on the podcast yesterday. So right back at it today. And, you know, of note, it felt like the Steelers came out of this game really relatively healthy. Now, the Ryan Shazier thing is an odd one, and let's start with that, because Shazier insisted after the game to a variety of people that he's absolutely fine and that he came out of the game as a precaution. But he was out of the game when the Steelers were down just one score. You wouldn't think that would be precautionary. And then he was ruled out of the game a little bit later on Monday night. And then I got a chance to see him yesterday at the facility, in the cafeteria. He was saying hello to Mr. Rooney, to Dan Rooney. He had shorts on. He had no brace on his knee. He was walking around fine. He told me, I literally said, "You look good." He said, "I'm good." And now we get a report from Aditi that he's not going to practice today. So sorry for the long-winded open, but that's where we are.
Yeah, and happy, Wednesday. Happy Wednesday to you. Week two of the NFL. Steelers-Bengals on tap for Sunday. Home opener at Heinz Field. Steelers are 1-0. Life is good, right?
If Shazier can play, it's good.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, look, I don't doubt your report one bit. In fact, included it in the write-up that I did this morning. And then you throw that on top of the things that you said, talking about how he reacted after the game. It's just going to be one of those wait-and-see things. And even if he doesn't practice on Wednesday, what are we going to be able to garner from that, really? I mean, because he's missed Wednesday practices before, right? And has played. So really, is Thursday the big day with him when it comes to that knee? I mean, obviously, if it was serious and he was going to require surgery, might we know that already?
Oh yeah, I don't think it's something like that. I mean, maybe it's just maybe not practicing is precautionary. You know, one of the things, and I've said this a million times, is the last person to ask about an injury is the injured person. I mean, if you want to get some insight into the injury, athletes always think they're coming back sooner than they are. They're always good. I mean, Marcus Wheaton said 10 days ago his shoulder was fine, no big deal. He hasn't practiced since. We hear this all the time. And with Shazier, obviously the track record isn't good. For those who don't know, I mean, this is his third year in the league. He played his 23rd game on Monday night. That was his 23rd game. So, you know, a guy like Bud Dupree played 16 games last year. He's, you know, coming into the season, you're thinking he's almost played as many games as Shazier. So I don't think the guy's fragile. I think playing that position, the way he plays it, at the weight he plays it, he is more susceptible to injury than a guy like Lawrence Timmons just because he's smaller. But, you know, this is a knee. This isn't I don't know if he got rolled up on or, you know, cut differently. Who knows? But it's concerning, obviously, because, as we talked about, he is, with all due respect to Cam Hayward, Ryan Shazier has the highest potential on that defense to be the most impactful player, I think. I mean, Hayward and Tuitt are great. We can debate that. I'm not saying etched in stone that I'm right, or, you know, if somebody argued the other way, I wouldn't argue with them. But he's a key, so we'll see what happens.
Probably most I think the best way to describe Shazier is still unknown ceiling, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I guess you look at the San Francisco game last year or even the game Monday night and you say, he can be that guy. He can be a guy who almost single-handedly takes over a game.
You know, how many tackles would he have had in that game had he played all of it, you know, 10. He had 6 total. You know, are we talking 9 or 10 tackles in that game? He had the interception. He had the forced fumble. He had a pass defensed on a nice play.
Saved a touchdown.
Saved a touchdown to Jordan Reed there. What did Mike Tomlin say about Shazier? And he played a central part in the scheme and helping defending against Jordan Reed. And look, I mean, in today's NFL with these tight ends the way they are, they're practically wide receivers. You know, you need guys like that. So it would indeed be a huge blow. And what do you do if he doesn't play? You know, who do you play alongside of? You're going to put two big bulky guys like Vince Williams and Lawrence Timmons in there if you choose not to play a lot of sub-package, you know, dime on obvious passing downs. Regardless, you're going to have on early downs, you know, your typical probably base or typical nickel defense out there. So, you know, will we see a combination of Fort, Williams and Timmons in the game, much like we saw last year with Sean Spence, Vince Williams and Timmons? I think it's a possibility, but we'll keep our fingers crossed. And like I said, I'm not so sure we'll learn a lot from the injury report on Wednesday if Shazier doesn't practice, because I think really Thursday might be the key day when it comes to him.
Yeah, Thursday. I mean, look, he's got to go Friday, so that's kind of that'll be the issue. We'll see. It's from what Mike said, it certainly sounded like we could see all three guys who were injured, who missed week one. We're just leaving Senquist Golson out of the conversation for the next 6 weeks. Okay, so let's just get past that. So it sounded like all, you know, he said, you know, leave the light on. Practice will dictate it. All the things he says every week for all three guys. And so if Wheaton plays, if Nix plays, if Cody Wallace plays, you could see Cody Wallace play. If you got Nix and Cody Wallace back, Dave, I think it's very possible. In fact, if you got Wheaton, Nix, and Cody Wallace back, the three guys who might not dress, in my mind, if I'm thinking about it, are the other two offensive linemen who both dressed for this game, which is unusual. They don't usually dress 8. Now, that will depend on Wallace being 100%, of course. But if Wallace and Harris would be the backup guys if they go with 7, so that would give you 2 of the spots. And then maybe Tyler Matakevich would sit, and that would give you 3 spots. And that's kind of, if you were thinking about it with a healthy 53-man roster, that's pretty close to what you'd have. And so that would mean 2 of the backers, Matakevich and Johnson, were out. Now, you know, things can change around, but 2 of the backers out, obviously Senquist Golson out, the quarterback out, 2 of the offensive linemen. That gives you 6 guys, and then LJ Fort is 7. So, but I know that you maybe have a little different thought about the wide receiver position. So I'll let you fire away.
Yeah, and I think you did kind of outline it great there. Obviously, Nix kind of plays into the equation here, because if he's healthy enough to go, obviously you're going to dress him, and you're not going to sit one of your tight ends to get him back, you know, back in it as well too. So the thing is, if you do have a guy like Nix back, then perhaps you can sit that extra linebacker, i.e. Tyler Matakevich, because you would have a guy to kind of replace him on special teams. But let's suppose, let's go a different route here. Let's say Nix and or Cody Wallace isn't able to go. I think you still have to dress the 2 offensive linemen to replace 1. And then I think you could come give me a reason why you need 5 wide receivers dressed. Let's start there.
Okay. Darius Heyward-Bey is going to dress because he's a good special teams player and he's a good blocker. Obviously, you know, AB and Eli Rogers are dressing. And then Coach plays special teams for you, and he's a guy, he's a threat. You know, made a couple plays in the second half.
If you use Justin Gilbert, if you use Justin Gilbert as a kick returner, really you can eliminate Coates from.
Yes, and he could probably do his role as a gunner, or, you know, anything else, any role that he plays, Justin Gilbert can play. I agree with that.
Carry on.
Let me just ask you as an aside: Justin Gilbert didn't see the field. Is that correct?
That's correct.
He did not play a special team snap.
Yeah, according to the – now, we're finishing up we don't necessarily chart special teams, but nothing, you know, especially on the post-game game book and in our charting so far, indicates that, that he saw the field on offense or defense, and he was listed as not playing in the game book as well.
Right, right. Okay, so I agree he can replace him on special teams. And let's just be straight up about it. If both guys are healthy – body of work, pedigree, Marcus Wheaton plays over Sammy Coates. So I don't think it's – assuming 100% health, if you decided that you only wanted four receivers, that would be unusual. The Steelers have always dressed all five. And I think – again, I think that you'll see snaps split relatively evenly. I think – I don't even think it's a question that all five will dress. But if for whatever reason they were only going to dress four, I also don't think it's a question about who – the four are Hayward, Bay, and Wheaton are clearly going to play in front of Sammy Coates.
Correct. And my whole argument is that you know, look, I don't know if it's going to come down to a decision with Coates versus Wheaton, but it very
what would you do? What would you do?
I'd dress Wheaton, David.
Well, if they're all healthy, would you dress all five?
No, I would not.
Wow, that shocks me.
No, I
would. It really does.
No, I would not. I think you have enough there. Look, you can use, you know, God forbid you got in a situation, you could use a guy probably like Xavier Grimble, you know, as a wide receiver. You know, look.
If you have Knicks back, would you consider sitting Grimble?
Oh, that's a tough one. But I would go because look, Grimble doesn't give you much on special teams, or at least I don't think he did in that game.
I would play Coates over Grimble
in that aspect. So let's see, because that would give you, you know, that is a distinct possibility. You know, that is.
I mean, no doubt in my mind, I'd play Coates over Grimble for sure.
That is a distinct possibility. It'll be look. I mean, we're going to play. You know, depending on how this injury report goes. My write-up Saturday night, as far as you know, how I like to try to predict these inactives every week, will be a tough one because of all of the things that you outlined. But you know, do you need three guys to rotate at one position? You know, outside.
Well, I think two because Wheaton can play the slot there with you know he can spell Rodgers or whatever, however you want to phrase it.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, Sammy can play maybe inside too if the need presents itself. But you know, that is just one of the several decisions that coaches have to make. That is kind of a game inside of a game as far as your roster juggling, you know, and especially when it comes to having enough helmets to go around. So it wouldn't surprise me. I'll end it like this: it wouldn't surprise me either way. And if the decision did come down between Wheaton and Sammy, I would dress Wheaton over Sammy because let's face it, Sammy, for all the expectations he's had heading into this season, it's been kind of disappointing, right? You know, you go back to the preseason, the uneven work there, the drop passes, the fumbles,
but still makes big plays. You know, he's a big play threat.
Yeah, he made, you know, tip your hat to the long, you know, reception he had from Roethlisberger in that game the other night, for sure. So, you know, but you know, can Wheaton deliver those same plays for you?
Yeah. I think the one thing that sometimes slips my mind, and I have to remind myself, is how fast Marcus Wheaton is. Well, I don't think he is not necessarily a possession receiver. He's faster than Manny Sanders. I mean, he has, like I said, on those plays when they line up in short yardage and they have guys on the outside, it doesn't matter which guy's out there. They'll go to all of them. And, you know, they'll run the go route with all of them. I'd like to see those four guys line up and have a go over a 40, you know, they're not running 60-yard dashes. So a 40-yard dash, that's a good question, Dave. How do you think it would go with the four guys on a 40-yard dash? Does Coates win that?
Coates, Wheaton, and who?
AB and Hayward Bay.
Oh, Hay Bay wins that, right? I mean, they won't.
He beats Coates. He beats Coates for sure.
Yeah, they won't even let him play in any of those reindeer games, I don't think, because didn't that happen during training camp?
I think there was one time. Maybe it was last year. I mean, is AB last of the four?
Oh wow, that's a good. I'd definitely pay $20 to see that. I think I would. Hey, it just goes to show you. Let's say AB was the slowest of that group, much like Jerry Rice. Remember, what did he run? Like a 4.6 40?
Right. AB, you can ask Breland if AB's fast enough. That's all you got to do.
Absolutely. And boy, the way that guy can sit coming out, break down in those breaks, man. It is just go back and watch some of those slow-mos from training camp of him sitting, coming out of those breaks and stop on a dime and give you 9 cents change and that kind of stuff. I mean, just absolutely incredible. But yeah, let's throw that one out to our readers today. TheTerriblePodcast@gmail.com. Who would win how would the four players rank, the four wide receivers that we talked about in a 40-yard dash, and go ahead and rank all five of them, on the 53-man roster: AB, Eli Rogers, Marcus Wheaton, Sammy Coates, and who am I missing? Darius Hayward Bay. Send us your order there. That should be interesting to see
I'll check with Cavoli because he is the guy who told us there was a day it was either in OTAs or it was at the end of last year. A couple of the guys were talking about it, and one guy they were in the locker room. They went back out and had the race. I mean, there was some trash talking going on in the locker room, and somebody pulled up. Like, I think maybe AB or somebody pulled up. Like 5 yards, 10 yards into the race, but I think it was AB. And I'm not sure if anybody else was in that race, but I'll double check on that as well. Okay, Dave. So you've had a chance, unfortunately, with writing yesterday and stuff. I haven't gone back through the film, and I apologize to our listeners for that. But tell me what you saw, because I know you wrote about it. What you saw with Artie Burns, and what schemes he was involved in when he was on the field for his 8 or 9 snaps.
Yeah, and Matthew Marksey put up this morning. Only 9 snaps. Let's see, 10 plays. I'm trying to recap what he had right here, but only 9 plays, and he got to see the field in the dime package, so there really wasn't much to kind of go over there.
So who help us out here? So who was on in the dime package? Where did Burns line up, and who was off?
Oh, I don't have my charting up in front of me, David, right now. Okay. I've got the.
So he was on the outside, I assume.
I'm trying to remember. I don't have it. They sent me the chart this morning. I don't have it open in front of me. Well, if you keep talking, I can pull that
okay.
out for you.
Well, it's because one of the things we heard, and this happened after the last preseason game, which was that Thursday game against Carolina when they practiced on Saturday. And this is the reason I'm bringing it up. This really intrigues me, and I think we'll get there here at some point in the season. I was surprised Timmons stayed on the field. He was 53 of 58 snaps. He got burned on that first third down. By Reed, and then on the same drive, that was one or a couple of the plays he came off the field was in that first drive. And then I think when the Steelers got the lead, they were willing to play more of I call it an umbrella. That's not a football term, but they were willing to have deep drops from the linebackers and play have everything happen in front of them. And so Timmons, you didn't have to run with guys. They're playing a zone in that scheme. And so he could stay on the field, which, that's fine in that kind of scheme. And so what they did in that practice that I'm referring to on the Saturday after the last exhibition game is they worked on dime. And this is before the Justin Gilbert had come in. And they moved Sean Davis to safety with Mitchell. They put Artie outside with Cockrell. They put Gay in the slot. And Robert Golden was the sixth guy, the Timmons role, if you will, but maybe a little bit closer to the line of scrimmage, lining up over the tight end, if you will, to run with him. And to me, that is an ideal setup. If you had everybody healthy, Burns gets his experience. Now, if we want to dream that Justin Gilbert, the lottery ticket, becomes something, and as Dave suggested, he's in there for Cockrell, well, that all of a sudden feels really good. You got Gilbert and Burns on the outside. You got Davis and Mitchell as your safeties, which would be, if all those guys play to their potential, that's a massive if because 3 of them are unknowns. That's your defensive backfield. And then the other 2 guys on the field are Gay in the slot, who's a known commodity, and Golden, who's become kind of a known commodity as the dime guy. I love that.
And there's a reason why I don't have the chart in front of me either. And I just remembered when Alex sent over the email this morning, he forgot to attach the file.
There you go.
So here's what Matthew wrote this morning. The majority of his playing time, 6 snaps, came on the Redskins' second drive in the middle of the fourth quarter, a 6-play drive in which the Steelers ran exclusively out of the dime package, with 3 other of his snaps scattered over the course of the rest of the game.
And Dave, that's what I would have expected. I saw the other 3 snaps, and then coming in late, and I'm curious, would you guess that that's how they line things up on the outside and move Gay into the slot? We'll see how it plays out. But I'm interested to see if the Steelers move toward that here over the next couple weeks, if that's what they get to, and if we start seeing Gay in the slot.
Here's what Matthew added onto that. The closest that Burns came to being involved in a play was on the 5th play of that aforementioned drive, which was a check down throw underneath to the tight end, on which Burns was the 3rd defender to arrive on the scene to hold the play to a 3-yard gain. So like I said, even though we'll have in our charting where he lined up, we're only talking 9 plays, and he really didn't do anything significant to note.
Right. So it would be more just when we get to the All-22, is just look how they lined up, what the scheme looked like.
But you did ask Mike Tomlin about that yesterday, and I thought it was you asked him how him and Justin Gilbert performed in practice leading up to the game, and then what he's kind of looking to him in the future. And Mike Tomlin made it seem like that last sentence that he said, during his answer, was the fact that I'm trying to pull it up.
It certainly was a positive response in terms of progress. Now, I wouldn't expect anything other than that, but it was more positive than I would have even expected.
Yeah, I think he said they're getting better, and I think their usage will reflect that rise. So, it's kind of hinting that, we're going to see their usage rise, but we'll see. Are we talking this week? Are we talking after the first quarter season? I tell you, when you have new guys like that in that defense, though, and as I mentioned on the podcast the other night, it was clearly evident that Sean Davis wasn't lining up in the right spot on several plays, and William Gay was just out there coaching them up as well too. So I think you have to be careful, not just to throw them out there just for the sheer fact that you want to get Timmons off the field. So I really believe, David, over the course of the next, let's say, 2 or 3 games, I think you're just going to see limited usage of that dime, and slowly try to work these young guys onto the field, maybe in situations late in games where you have kind of a nice lead on the scoreboard and can kind of roll them out there.
I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, this is where Burns not being able to play in the preseason sets them back, because they haven't had a chance to work on it. So I think you're spot on. I mean, you're going to look at a situation with Dalton this week. Obviously, next week is going to be a fascinating game with, we'll have the whole rookie quarterback conversation with Carson Wentz, and then you come back with Alex Smith in Pittsburgh. So you're going to have 2 veteran guys and a guy as green as they come in Wentz over the next 3 weeks as quarterbacks. And I would not expect them to necessarily throw these guys to the fire against Andy Dalton this week.
Yeah, we're hopefully going to have Paul Derner on with us later.
Paul Derner, yeah.
Later on in the show, if I don't screw this one up, and we'll talk about previewing that game. And look, I mean, say what you will about the Bengals. I think overall the Bengals are going to have a down year, and quite honestly, they probably should have lost that game on Sunday against the Jets, but shoulda, coulda, woulda. All that matters is you come out of there with a W, and they did. And outside of Andy Dalton being on his back several times in that game, he looked like he threw the ball well. We know all about
– He did. After a bad first quarter, he was really good.
And we know all about the Bengals. There's not going to be any surprises there. And I thought Mike Tomlin was in – I don't know, playing cat and mouse games or what, saying that he expects Eifert to dress for this game. And you know, that got a lot of what's on Twitter when I kind of tweeted that out there, kind of live blogging that press conference there. And, you know,
I have to tell you, when Mike talks about those things, I'm not always paying 100% attention because, you know, we're all familiar with the Bengals and, you know, kind of know how that part of the press conference goes. I thought I misheard him. And because I had to look up, I went to the Bengals roster and I looked to see if there was another guy named Tyler. I was like, what's he talking about?
Unless I'm,
because he's not playing. Right?
One would think, but if you go read what Jeff Hobson wrote on Bengals.com in his kind of his Q&A session with fans that posted this morning, Tyler's return is a question mark. He says Eifert looked sharp on the field before the Jets game, but I don't think they want to push him enough to get him back. Enough to get him back for Denver on September 25th. Then the question seems to be play him in the quick turnaround game on September 29th in the Thursday game against Miami, or give him 11 more days and start him in Dallas. But who knows? Maybe he's out there versus Denver. So he mentions nothing about the Steelers there. So, look, I mean, one would think that there's absolutely no way he's going to play against the Steelers on Sunday. I'll be surprised. Maybe Mike knows something we don't.
Yeah, the answer is you always prepare for the best that they have to offer, and if you get less, then good for you. You don't want to be unprepared. So I'm not really surprised that he threw it out there. But I you know, it's from the get go when the Bengals have been talking about this surgery of Eifert, it was, you know, 4 weeks, first four games for sure, and then you hope he comes back. Now we'll see. We'll see where it goes. Dave, I got to see some of that game, and yeah, you're right. The Jets defensive front seven is very good, and they, you know, kudos to Steve McClendon. I don't know how many stacks Steve McClendon had last year, but I'm guessing with the two he got on Sunday, he at least tied, if not surpassed, his sack total from last year. They did some work on a very good Bengals offensive line, and we'll get more into it on Friday as we usually do. But you know, that's something to see, because the Steelers didn't get much pressure against Kirk Cousins, against that Skins offensive line, which doesn't have the pedigree of the Bengals offensive line. So I imagine both units are looking for a little bit of retribution coming up in this game.
McClendon last year had one sack, and that came against the Bengals, right? Remember, he had to play – didn't he have to play defensive end in that game?
The first one, second one, your memory is better than mine on this one. I don't have that. I don't have that.
I'm a recovered alcoholic. My memory ain't that.
I'm not going to make the joke I want to make. So.
Let's see here. I'm pulling this up as we speak. First meeting against Cincinnati in week eight, because that was when Tua was out, right? So he did have a sack against the Bengals that week. And
what was Tua out? Was Tua out with a thumb? Is that what he was dealing with?
No, remember,
with?
It was a sprained knee, right?
I'm drawing a complete blank on. Is that the game that he broke? Oh, Tua made the tackle that broke Dalton's thumb, right?
Later in the season, right. Tua originally injured himself in that game against the Cardinals. Suffered that knee injury and then missed the next, what, two games after that. The game against, what, the Chiefs and the Bengals, I think. And then McClendon had to log the snaps at defensive end in those next couple of games there. So McClendon went into that game this past weekend against the Bengals with what, five career sacks. He now has seven.
Were you at all, again, the other thing, the last drive, as they say, I was preparing for the post game and I wasn't paying as much attention to exactly who was on the field. Were you surprised we didn't see more of Ricardo Matthews? There were only 58 plays, so you run the guys out there because no fatigue early in the season. Hayward's injury didn't seem to bother him. Not surprised.
Yeah, I'm not overly surprised. Yeah, I think as a whole, as we mentioned on the show the other day, I think they want to try to hold to it. And by the time the season ends, you know, I'm willing to bet both Tua and Hayward are probably around the 77%, 78% total defensive snaps played. You know, so I'm not overly surprised. Had they, you know, built a, you know, obviously if you build a bigger lead, you can get some of those guys in the game more. So I wasn't much that jumped out to me on the snap chart this week.
Okay. Anything else you want to get to before we get to Paul?
Yeah, a lot of people have still having a lot of having to take some antacids, I think, because of the call on 4th and 1 by Roethlisberger to go deep to Antonio Brown. What's amazing here is that, you know, they ran this when they went back, had the other 4th and 1 play later on. What was it in the second half where he connected with Eli Rogers over the middle? That was the exact same play, exact same personnel, exact same formation that they used. So it just goes to show you, A, you can run the same play twice and get away with it, even on a crucial down like 4th and 1. And for those people that are kind of concerned about Roethlisberger going deep on 3rd and short and 4th and short, which he did several times in this game. I think it was, what, a total of 6 times the Steelers faced or Roethlisberger went deep on like 3rd and 5 or shorter, and of course 4th and 1 and shorter. Dating back to 2012, David, Roethlisberger has gone deep 13 times on 3rd or 4th down plays with the offense needing two or 1 yards for a first down. All right.
I would have guessed more. I would have guessed it happened, you know, 6 times last year. So I would have guessed, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15. Going back to, so I would have guessed it was, you know, significantly higher, like, 25.
Now. Okay. Now this is only 3rd or 4th down with 2 or 1 yards needed.
Yeah. Well, we've seen it, and this is part of their MO. Is it evenly distributed by year, or is it higher more recently?
I don't have it broken. I just have the total sitting here in front of me. How many of those 13 passes did Roethlisberger complete? Now, of course, this includes what happened, you know, the other night as well.
I remember a bunch of them in the San Francisco game, a bunch of them. I feel like I remember 1 or 2 in the San Francisco game, 1 down the right sideline really early. I know late in the season, because I was referencing the San Francisco game when they had an incompletion, I would guess, you know, half, I would get 6 or 7.
How about 10? 10 of 13.
Wow. Wow, that's impressive.
For 371 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Well, there you go. Listen to that. That's you know, 28 yards a pass. I mean, it's 10 completions. So it's 37 yards of completion. That's it. That's incredible.
And now keep in mind, these are only deep pass attempts. And by deep pass attempts, according to the NFL, that's more than 15 yards past the original line of scrimmage.
Right. Okay. So that doesn't count the Eli Rogers pass and stuff. But yeah. No, that's a great stat, and it's a very impressive execution.
So 10 of 13. I mean, that's 76.9% completion ratio on the 13 passes dating back to 2012. You know, obviously, I think it's all situationally and what you see. And as we talked the other day, he probably could have checked out of that had he not gotten the coverage that he wanted outside with AB. But Ben ain't afraid to go deep on 3rd or 4th down in situations when you only need 1 or 2 yards. And as we mentioned, boy, what a job this team did converting 3rd and 4th downs against the Redskins. Obviously, that percentage is going to lower as the season rolls on. But if you're able to stay on the field and convert those kind of money downs like that, good things are sure to follow there. So I thought that was an interesting stat. Hopefully, that'll maybe calm a few nerves out there. People still may be upset with the call, especially when, look, you go back to that play with Antonio Brown the other night. He had his choice of what, Sammy Coates or Eli Rogers for an easy conversion, and maybe even a touchdown to Sammy over in the middle, you know, on that play. But you know Ben, he wants to go big or go home, and why not when you have the best wide receiver in the league with Antonio Brown? So I just want to kind of make sure we close up shop with that.
All right. Well, without further ado, then let's get to Paul Denner, and we'll take a look at the Bengals.
And welcome back to the Terrible Podcast. Pleased to be joined once again by Paul Denner, who covers the Cincinnati Bengals for the Cincinnati Inquirer. You can, of course, read his work online at the Cincinnati Inquirer website. Great guest. We were pleased to have him last year. He did a great job the couple times we had him. Paul, welcome back to the Terrible Podcast.
Hey, good to be on with you guys.
Thanks, Paul. Throw out your Twitter handle out there for everybody to follow you.
It's at Paul Dehner Jr., so Dehnerjr.
And you constantly provide great information concerning the Bengals. So anybody who wants some previews of what's going on with the Bengals leading up to this game, make sure you are following Paul on Twitter. Paul, let's get right to it. Bengals Steelers once again, and boy, coming out of what happened during that playoff game, last year, both these teams have to be chomping at the bit to get at each other once again, right?
Yeah, I would say so. Although no one will tell you about that, right? I mean, I think everybody's kind of playing very close to the vest, trying not to say anything to stir the pot, certainly at least not during the week. But, especially from the Bengals side, where they had to spend the entire offseason discussing and dealing with what happened at Paul Brown Stadium in January and the meltdown between the fumble and the personal fouls on Jones and Burfict and everything else. I mean, to have to hear about that over and over every single day and deal with it every single day during a season where not only that, but, the Steelers were who they were playing when Andy Dalton broke his thumb. There's just no way possible that doesn't burn in you and that this game isn't circled on your calendar.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, Vontaze Burfict, of course, was going to miss this meeting between the two teams. The Steelers are talking, seems this week that, the Bengals aren't our real rival. The Ravens are. And I think Andy Dalton said today during his conference call, well, we consider the Steelers our rival, even if they don't. So definitely going to be, the media, I think, really going to try to amp this thing up a little bit more than the players will over the next couple of days. But regardless, it should be a great game at Heinz Field on Sunday. When you look at the Bengals and what's transpired during the offseason, everybody knows that Hugh Jackson is now with Cleveland and is their head coach. I have a lot of admiration from an X's and O's standpoint of what Hugh Jackson is as an offensive mind. Now, Paul Alexander, who I believe has been with the organization for a few years, is obviously the offensive line coach. But how's this transition going from an offensive standpoint? How much is left over? Are you seeing from Hugh Jackson? Tell us a little bit about the changes that you've seen offensively now that Hugh Jackson is gone.
Yeah, Ken Zampezi has been around ever since Marvin Lewis showed up, and he's been the quarterback's coach. And so he's come and he's seen Jay Gruden come through, and he saw Hugh Jackson come through. And really what Jay, because Hugh certainly built off what Jay was doing, but it was a very similar scheme. And Kenny has kept all of that pretty much in place. I mean, it haven't changed a whole lot. I think what we saw against the Jets was certainly a lot more passing, but he kind of calls the fact that they were throwing it a lot more irrelevant a little bit because it had more to do with what the game dictated, with the Jets having most of their strength in the middle and the Bengals being able to take advantage on the edges. But I think it's mostly the same thing. That was the reason he was promoted, because he's been working side by side with Andy Dalton Dalton's entire career. And really, that's what this move was all about. It was about keeping Andy Dalton on the ascension that he's been on over the last couple of years. If Dalton plays at the level that he was playing at last season when healthy, the Bengals feel like they're going to have a chance to be making a deep run in the postseason every single year. And so when you promote the guy who he's closest with professionally, has been during his entire time here, that's what this is all about. And I think, Kenny's earned that being around for a while, but it's all about keeping those two on the same page.
When you go back and you watch the Jets game from this past Sunday, I thought Andy Dalton played well outside of maybe the first quarter or so. Obviously everybody knows who AJ Green is, the offensive line, Andre Whitworth, one of the game's premier left tackles. Kevin Zeitler has developed into one of the premier right guards in the league. But outside of that, there's a few question marks. And obviously I'm sure the talking point you've been having to deal with all week is, why did Andy Dalton go down seven times in that game against the Jets. Was that, and look, I mean, Steve McClendon, Steelers fans know all about him during his time in Pittsburgh. He had two sacks in that game. Is there concerns about, say, the interior portion of this offensive line as this team heads into week two?
You know, not necessarily, because, you know, they obviously need to fix what went wrong against the Jets, giving up seven sacks. I mean, that's the most Dalton's ever been sacked in his career, and they've only had one game with more than that since 1996 around here, and there were some bad, bad clubs if you go back into that era. But, you know, this is also a group that has been one of the best in the league for a number of years now at protecting the quarterback. And it's the same group outside of switching out Andre Smith, who's now in Minnesota, with 2015 first-round pick Cedric Oboehe at right tackle. And so if you're talking about what went wrong, I mean, I think the sample size is much larger on this group being good than the one is against the Jets not being so good. I mean, Russell Bodine had a bad day, and he's sort of been the weak link at center on this offensive line here since he arrived. And I think teams maybe are trying to take advantage of that. They had some problems with stunts on the right-hand side. Kevin Zeitler and Cedric Oboehe, he had issues. That was two of the sacks as well. I mean, that's something that happened, and they've got to deal with it. But I don't think that there's a concern, so to speak. I think they're hanging their hat on what this group has been over the years more than what they were on Sunday.
Obviously a great running back tandem in Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard. No issues there. A lot of people point to that wide receiver position with players not named A.J. Green because of course, Mohamed Sanu, Marvin Jones left via free agency. And then, now you're left with Brandon LaFell, and the people listening to this podcast don't need to be introduced to Tyler Boyd during his time in Pittsburgh. What's the drop off there right now, and what can those two players become as the season progresses?
You know, I think maybe one of the biggest pleasant surprises for the Bengals on Sunday was the play of Brandon LaFell. He played really well. He had a couple of huge plays, third and long conversions where he was able to get free and make a big play, including Andy Dalton's dropping a dime on him for a 49-yard reception late in the game that led to a touchdown to help put them ahead. And, they hadn't connected on a pass the entire preseason because LaFell was out. He had a hand injury and played a little bit in a preseason game, and they actually never threw it to him that whole time. So there was a thought of, what is he going to look like? He struggled last year in New England. But the previous year in 2014, New England, he was great and a big part of their Super Bowl run. So from all indications from the first game, it was that Brandon LaFell looks pretty good. And they might have a little something on Marvin Lewis even said after the game. I think they might have been sleeping on LaFell a little bit because they were able to break him free. And Boyd was spectacular in the preseason here. He had just a couple catches for 24 yards in the opener, but he's starting in the slot, and he was really the storyline of August, was how good he looked in camp and in the games, just making play after play. So I think they're comfortable. It's not Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu yet, but I think they're very comfortable with what it is right now.
Mike Tomlin, during his press conference on Tuesday, said he expects Tyler Eifert to play. So I think you would probably disagree with that, but let's assume he doesn't. I like C.J. Uzomah. I thought the Steelers should drafted him a few years ago, late in that draft. They obviously didn't. But we know how good Tyler Eifert is. But how good is this, two or three tight ends trying to replace him right now?
They're not Tyler Eifert. I mean, that's the thing. And Tyler's not going to play on Sunday. CJ came out. He actually had a decent game blocking and had a 54-yard reception in the first half. It really helped set him up. They're still trying to find chemistry with Dalton and Uzomah. I mean, they've had a connection, but they've had times then where they couldn't quite hook up, where it was open, and that's going to probably take a little bit of time. Tyler Croft is coming back from a hyperextended knee injury. I think they thought he was going to be the guy to be in there starting, and they're gradually working him back. He only took 12% of the snaps as they ease him back in. I'd expect that number to increase a little bit, where maybe you'll see him play 25 to 35% of the snaps in the game against Pittsburgh as they get him moving. I think they're okay if that combo is, but, you know, Eifert is a game changer for this offense, because you can do whatever you want to stop A.J. Green. But if you have a guy like him working on in the seams, it's just it's really a pick your poison for opposing defenses. And so they're hopeful to get him back at some point in the near future. It's not going to be this weekend. There's definitely a pretty big drop off there. And, you know, you would think the teams are going to have to take advantage of the Bengals right now when they don't have H5 out there.
When you flip over to the defensive side of the ball, a lot of familiar faces. Obviously, they'll be without Vontaze Burfict this week. But, boy, the cornerbacks, Adam Jones, Dre Kirkpatrick. You look at the young safety, Sean Williams, has been impressive. George Ioka. We all know about Pico and Geno Atkins, what a force those guys are. But when you look at the linebackers specifically here with this team, and especially without Burfict, is this the weakness right now on this Bengals defense, or is there somewhere else the Steelers, you know, can potentially exploit on Sunday?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, I definitely wouldn't think that. I mean, the Bengals defensive line is their strength, and their secondary is very solid right now. Without Burfict, there is certainly a fall, and you saw that. The Jets were able to run for 152 yards, and mostly what they did is try to spread them out, get him into the nickel defense and take Ray Malouf off the field and then run at Carlos Dansby and Vinny Ray, or force him to leave Malouf on the field and have him try to cover Matt Forte. So, you know, that changes the game a little bit. So, yeah, I think for right now, until 55 comes back, that's going to be an area where teams are going to attack for sure.
The biggest matchup, is it whoever plays on the right side rushing against Alejandro Villanueva, the Steelers' left tackle? Is that, I mean, what do you see as the biggest matchup when you look at Steelers' offense versus Bengals' defense?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the Bengals have done a really good job. I think they're one of the few teams that have consistently done a good job on Antonio Brown. And for whatever reason. And that has to continue. I mean, that was apparent watching the Steelers and the Redskins on Monday night. That's not changing. That's not going anywhere. And I think it has to start there when you're talking about this team. And they got to, you know, it's just like any game. It's got to be a slugfest, and it's got to be the Bengals defensive line has to win all day up front. You know, I mean, when they've won in Pittsburgh, the few times that they have, I mean, they're 3-4 there in the last seven. When they have won, it's been because the defensive line has just been in Ben's face all day, whether it be Geno Atkins or Carlos Dunlap or any number of other guys. Those guys have to dominate up front for sure. Whether that will happen or not will probably be a big difference in who wins this game.
Before I close you out, Marcus Hunt, a big guy, finally appears to be coming into his own. Is he underrated or overrated right now at this point? And talk about the loss of Cedric Pierman on special teams. What a great special teams player that guy was.
Yeah, most people think Marcus Hunt stinks around here, at least according to the fans. So I wouldn't say he could be overrated, but he proved him wrong on Sunday, where he played his best game that he's had here. I mean, he hasn't had a lot of opportunity, to be honest. He's barely played, and so for him to get in there, you know, he blocks a kick. He was pass rushing. He's starting in the nickel, right in at the defensive tackle position. He was able to get his hand on a couple of passes, one that should have been an interception. You know, I think we don't know what he is yet, but that was certainly a big step in the right direction against the Jets. And Pierman, yeah, I know that's definitely a loss, and they're dealing with having to have other guys take his place on special teams. They're hoping maybe he would be a guy that would be an IR to return later in the year. But, yeah, I mean, he was really the a captain and a guy that really holds it down on teams for them.
All right, so what do you think? Are we going to see a low-scoring game or, you know, a real game similar to what we saw in the wild card game, or is this going to be a game, you know, first one to 35 wins?
Well, if the Bengals have anything to do with it, they want it to be low-scoring. You look at the total points in the games that the Bengals have won in Pittsburgh over the last few years, it's about 26. In the games that they've lost, total points have been about 43. It's pretty clear the type of game that plays into their hands. So, you know, if it's I think, you know, it's all going to come down to if this Bengals defense can find a way to slow down that potent Steelers offense with so many weapons. So I think that they do because they're so familiar with each other. You just so often see that, particularly early in the season. So I think it will be low scoring, but, you know, these games, I mean, how many slugfests in a row do you have to watch between the two teams and know what it's probably going to look like, right?
Exactly. Okay, how about a prediction? I know it's only Wednesday. You got a prediction for us?
I think that the Steelers win, you know, at home. I think the Bengals offense, while it looked really good against the Jets, still had its issues. And they're working out. And without Perfect and without Tyler Eifert, I just think it changes things a little bit for them. I mean, I think, you know, they're going to be pretty scary later in the year when they do get everybody back. But for now, I just think it's going to be a tall task to go up there. Again, it'll be another close game, though. I can't see anything other than a close game between these two teams.
All right, great. Paul, awesome as usual. David and I look forward to catching back up with you late in the season there. Thanks for all your insight. It's great. People, make sure you can read his stuff at the Cincinnati Inquirer website, and make sure you follow Paul on Twitter as well. Paul, once again, thanks for your time. We'll be catching up with you later on in the season.
No problem. Have a good one.
All right. Thanks for Paul Daner for sitting in with us today. And as you could tell, David Todd was unable to participate in that chat with Paul. He got hung up at the hockey rink down there and couldn't get parked and inside in time to take part of that interview. And he certainly does apologize for that. So with that, I'll kind of wrap up this Wednesday show. Thanks for following along with us. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to donate to the cause, you can go to SteelersDepot.com and hit the donate button there up top in the right navigational bar. David and I will be back on Friday. We'll run through more preview of the Bengals-Steelers game coming up on Sunday, give you our picks around the NFL, update the injury report, and all the good stuff that goes along with a normal Friday in-season Terrible Podcast. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.